Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Former Trump National Security Advisor speaks about relations among global powers at the University of Idaho through the perspective of the Peace Through Strength Doctrine. Recreation sites nearby staying open so far during government shutdown. And Pullman Regional Hospital ready to break ground on taxpayer-supported expansion. We'll have details to those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Local recreation sites on the Lower Snake River are staying open during the federal government shutdown. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers manages the landings at Wawawi, Blyton Landing, and Nisqually John Canyon in southern Whitman County. Dylan Peters of the Corps' Walla Walla District said, "We haven't been directed to prepare to shut down anything." The Lewiston Tribune reports a spokesperson for the Corps said the agency has not been directed to take any action to close services, and because it has access to money from power sales through the semi-public Bonneville Power Administration, it therefore may be unaffected by the federal funding shutdown. Anglers will once again be allowed to keep adult wild Chinook salmon starting Saturday. Idaho, Washington, and Oregon suspended the harvest of wild fall Chinook September 19th due to above-average water temperatures in the Snake and Columbia Rivers, which could result in lower survival of wild fish protected under the Endangered Species Act. The federal government has approved allowing the states to use a sliding scale that allows anglers to keep wild fall Chinook when their numbers exceed 5,000. The Lewiston Tribune reported Idaho Fish and Game regional fisheries official Joe DuPont said, with water temperatures decreasing in the Snake River, fall Chinook salmon are starting to move upstream. If you like to fish around Heller Bar or in the lower Salmon River, the fish should be showing up there soon. 3 years after voters in the city of Pullman approved a tax increase to help pay for an expansion of Pullman Regional Hospital, hospital officials say they are ready to break ground. The Pullman Regional Hospital Board unanimously voted yesterday to approve the $41 million patient care expansion project, which will involve three phases of remodel and new construction. The first phase will begin next month, and the entire project will take 3 years. The Lewiston Tribune reports the expansion has changed since voters approved a $27.5 million bond in 2022. Since then, there has been rising construction costs driven by inflation, which have forced the project to primarily become a remodel rather than an expansion. The finalized plan will remodel 30,000 square feet of the hospital and add 3,000 square feet of new space. The proposal to voters also included construction of a new medical office building, which has been removed from the bond-funded portion of the work and is now earmarked for a possible Phase 4. Voters in the Pullman Regional Hospital District, whose boundaries are the same as the Pullman city limits, rejected hospital bond measures twice in 2019 before approving the project in 2021. In 2021, voters rejected a measure from Pullman Regional Hospital that would have annexed properties outside the city limits into the hospital taxing district. The remaining cost for the patient care expansion project will be covered by donations to the Pullman Regional Hospital. The current hospital building opened in 2004. The new Washington state sales tax on services is set to take effect this week. Senate Bill 5814, the new sales tax on services, will pay for the state's newest budget, which will become official next Wednesday. Budget officials say Senate Bill 5814 will bring in an estimated $3.6 billion over the next 2 years to partially cover a shortfall in the operating budget. The $3.6 billion includes $1.1 billion for the the current two-year budget and $2.6 billion over 4 years. The new sales tax will also give local governments hundreds of millions of dollars for their purposes. Giant cable network Comcast says the new measure taxing advertising services is illegal and is suing to block it. According to a Department of Revenue spokesperson, the tax on advertising is expected to bring in about $475 million over the next 4 years, but it's unclear what happens to newly collected money if a court rules the tax is invalid. Lawmakers say if courts block the tax, it would be hugely problematic for the $77.8 billion budget they passed after months of negotiations earlier this year. Senate Bill 5814 earns money by taxing more retail services, including $633 million from taxes on temporary staffing, $127 million from taxes on security, $360 million from live presentations, and $189 million from taxes on technology. One exemption to the law is temporary staffing services used by hospitals. There are also new taxes on nicotine products such as Zyn pouches. At various revenue department listening sessions with affected businesses this summer, revenue department employees heard complaints about a lack of clarity over how the new taxes would be implemented and the negative effects on their profit margins. Other tax increases include financial businesses with annual net incomes over $1 billion, taxes on businesses and occupation rates for service businesses with gross incomes over $5 million annually, and a few transportation funding stream fee hikes. An Idaho Department of Land firefighter died Friday of last week. A falling tree hit her in a prescribed fire near Kuski. According to a Department of Land's news release, Minnesota resident Isabella Oscarson, a seasonal employee, was assisting on a U.S. Forest Service prescribed burn related to the Tinker Bugs timber sale in the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest when a falling tree crushed her. Emergency crews took Oscarson to the Grangeville Hospital where doctors pronounced her dead. The timber sale and prescribed fire is taking place south of U.S. Highway 12, above the middle fork of the Clearwater River, southeast of Kuski. In the news release, Lands Department Director Dustin Miller said, IDL extends its deepest sympathies to Isabella's family and friends. This is a tragedy that hits the employees at the Idaho Department of Lands and the broader wildlands fire community extremely hard. We are heartbroken and doing everything we can do to support her family and our staff during this difficult time. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Governor Brad Little ordered the state to lower flags to half staff in honor of the fallen firefighter. Coeur d'Alene police say the 77-year-old woman who was attacked in her bed in the late afternoon of September 19th is expected to die from her injuries. Coeur d'Alene police report officers responded to a residence at 1197 Skyline Drive near Cherry Hill Park, where they found a woman with life-threatening injuries and a large loss of blood. According to the spokesman review, police identified the woman as Susan Stratton. Crews took Stratton to Kootenai Health Center for treatment. Doctors put Stratton into hospice care after they determined she would not regain consciousness. Police first investigated the accident as aggravated battery, but have now reopened the case as a homicide investigation. Investigators say Stratton was the victim of a deliberate, isolated attack. Police say they have a person of interest but are seeking further information to uncover more evidence. Police believe the suspect who attacked Susan Stratton was riding a bicycle between Athol and Coeur d'Alene. Investigators are looking for anyone who may have video footage of an adult riding a bike between Clagstone Road and Highway 95 in Athol near North Pope Road and Government Way between 8:55 p.m. and 4:50 a.m. Thursday, September 18th. Police are also searching for an iPhone, which the perpetrator may have discarded somewhere along the route. People with additional information are asked to call the Coeur d'Alene Police Department at 208-769-2320. That's 208-769-2320. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Idaho has one of the highest rates of gun suicides for older Americans in the country. Data compiled by the Gun Violence Data Hub finds Idaho's gun suicide rate for people age 70 and older was more than 22 per 100,000 residents between 2009 and 2023, the fourth highest rate in the nation. The research also finds that gun suicides among this population has increased dramatically between 2003 and 2023. Aaron Mendelson with the Gun Violence Data Hub and a data journalist for The Trace says the research shows a clear geography for this issue.
It's quite often in western states, places like Idaho, rural Colorado, Montana, New Mexico, that see the highest rates of this. And some of my sources said there is kind of the frontier mentality, the pick yourself up by your bootstraps, take on everything by yourself.
The research shows rural areas have the highest gun suicide rates for older Americans, and people over the age of 70 have the highest rate of any age group. Gun suicide kills more men 70 and older than car crashes, researchers found. White men over 70 are far more likely to die by gun suicide than any other group, with rates 3 times higher than Latino or black men and 15 times higher than white women. Mendelson notes there are many reasons for the high suicide rate among older people.
There's no one thing, but we're talking about factors like severe physical illness, pain, financial pressures, isolation, often the death of a spouse, a lack of mental health care, and the availability of firearms. These are all things that play a role, experts say, in these high rates of suicide among our older neighbors.
Mendelson says one of the most impactful interviews he did was with a woman who lost her husband to gun suicide in 2019.
She said that suicide when she was younger was something that was kind of hidden and that we didn't talk about it, and that things aren't going to get better unless we talk about it.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Hungadunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hungadunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
5 years after the Almeida fire destroyed more than 3,000 homes and businesses in Southern Oregon, the cities of Talent and Phoenix are prioritizing energy efficiency, affordability, and wildfire resilience as they rebuild. Phoenix worked with Energy Trust of Oregon to build a new energy-efficient public safety building to replace facilities lost in the 2020 wildfire. The 20,000-square-foot hub houses city offices, police, and fire services. Phoenix City Manager Eric Swanson says with the help of local, state, and federal partners, the city has been able to make the best out of a tragic situation.
We've been able to take advantage of a lot of energy efficiency initiatives in our building, which I think has really set us up well for the future. We're planning for the worst, hoping for the best.
The building's energy efficiency measures, including efficient lighting, HVAC systems, and stormwater management, are expected to save thousands of dollars annually. Swanson says residential construction in the city is largely complete, although rebuilding of mobile homes and commercial buildings has been lagging behind. Talent, Oregon is just south of Phoenix and lost 700 homes in the fire. Michael Hoke with Energy Trust of Oregon helped with the rebuilding process there.
We'd lost 40% of our town. That building stock was a lot built in the 60s or the 70s. How do we encourage people to build more resilient, to build with energy efficiency top of mind?
He says the city partnered with Energy Trust to create the Energy Performance Scores Rebuild Program, which incentivizes wildfire victims to rebuild their homes to be more energy efficient and wildfire resistant. He adds residents are happy with the results.
It's always lovely getting a text from one of them saying, hey, I'm not paying any energy because I'm producing more solar energy than I'm consuming. Or, hey, my energy bill is still pretty low.
For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Right-wing national groups are asking to intervene in the lawsuit by a group of Idaho education advocates who want House Bill 93, which would require Idaho taxpayers to pay for private and religious K-12 schools, declared unconstitutional. The Partnership for Education Choice filed a motion to intervene on the side of the state Tuesday. House Bill 93 is a $50 million program to create tax credits between $5,000 and $7,500 per child for families that put their children into private schools. Two-thirds of Idaho's private schools are religious. A coalition that includes the Idaho Education Association and the Moscow School District sued in September, saying the Idaho Supreme Court should declare it unconstitutional because it violates a clause in the state constitution that requires the state to, quote, establish and maintain a general, uniform, and thorough system of public free common schools. Opponents of House Bill 93 note supporters are talking about expanding the program to $300 million per year or more. The Partnership for Education Choice claims the tax credits for private schools creates fairness. EdChoice Legal Advocates Executive Vice President Thomas Fisher said in a news release, "We will fight to protect these families' constitutional right to direct their children's education from being taken away by a lawsuit that puts politics ahead of students' needs." On Monday, Attorney General Raul Labrador's office asked the court for a deadline extension to prepare its response to the lawsuit. Justices directed state attorneys to respond by October 10th. If the Idaho Supreme Court approves its motion to intervene, the School Choice Partnership would make arguments alongside the Idaho Attorney General's office, which is gearing up to defend the program. The keynote address at the University of Idaho's Borah Symposium last night was former Trump Deputy National Security Advisor K.T. McFarland, who the Borah Foundation says played a pivotal role in shaping the America First and Peace Through Strength doctrines during Trump's first term. McFarland spoke about how warfare and competition between the great powers is changing.
So the Chinese looked at our military in the Iraq War, and they said, yikes, what the United States has the ability to do is integrate all of those aspects that you've talked about, missiles and others, and they're using satellites. So what are we, China, going to do? We're going to develop we want to put our money in our military. We're going to, do things that are going to take out those low-hanging satellites. Because we know if we can destroy America's command and control and their ability to talk and see with each other, then we kind of render their military useless. What we have seen in Europe with the failure of Russia's ability to take land mass, and what we also saw, I think, in the forever wars in the Middle East of taking land, is that that kind of warfare is really, it's seen its day, where it's heavy, mechanized units trying to take land and hold land. What we are going to see in the future, which is what you're talking about, is a couple of changes. One, the over-reliance, especially in the Navy, of aircraft carriers. I mean, that's how we won World War II. That's how we've kept the peace. That's how we've kept the global commons open, is with aircraft carriers. But what the Chinese have learned is that, wait, you could take out a really big, expensive, gazillion, trillion-dollar aircraft carrier with not a whole lot of money and some of the missiles that you're talking about. So the Chinese have developed a different kind of military. I don't think we've thought, we should spend more on the Navy, but I don't think we should spend it the way we've done. The next thing, though, that is important, the lesson that we've seen in the last several years about sort of where is military going, is the drones. It's a new form of warfare. We're not going to rely on aircraft carriers anymore. We're not going to man pilots. We're just not. It's not going to be tank units. It's going to all be drones. And these are cheap. They're maneuverable. You don't have a man in the loop, so if a drone goes down, you don't have a pilot behind enemy lines. You have to figure out how to save. And what Ukraine has shown is that against a far formidable conventional foe, if they can develop drones, and they're making them in their basements, that if you can make a drone and you can have an effective drone, even if only 10% of them work, They're cheap. They're easy. You can make them really fast. You can make them overnight. So that the new form of warfare that we're going to see, and I think we see it playing, we will see it playing out in Asia as well, is who can build drones, who can build satellites, who can build this new kind of tech warfare that's also hardened so that you don't take it out with a satellite anti-missile.
That was former Trump Deputy National Security Advisor KT McFarland speaking at the University of Idaho last night. McFarland answered a question from the audience about the impacts of the seemingly chaotic Trump tariff manipulations.
I would say one thing, knowing President Trump really well, always take him seriously. You don't take him literally. And so when he like slaps a tariff on and says, unless you, he knows that at the end of the day, that country can't survive without trading with the United States. Now, maybe they can hold out. China can probably hold out longer than anybody. But some countries can't hold out 48 hours with trading to the United States. And so he will use that leverage, and he will be ruthless about it, of using that leverage. Now, what will happen? Does he really mean to have those tariffs? Well, maybe not. I mean, it'd be okay, we're making money on the tariffs, but they're really negotiating leverage. And the negotiating leverage to say to that country, unless you do what we want in access to your market, unless you lower those tariffs, unless you have an equal, we trade fairly, not freely, fairly in this new reciprocal trade, then, you know, we can hold out. We can hold out a whole lot longer than you can, Salvador. If you need to, Honduras, if you want to, or Costa Rica, you want to sell your flowers in the flower markets of the grocery stores of America, you need to have access to our markets, and we can bankrupt you. And again, this is hardball. But other people are playing hardball with us. And so do we win the tariff wars? I think we do. I think it's going to be very painful along the way, and there's going to be great dislocations. I mean, you're in Idaho. One of your great businesses is grains and farming, the farming industry, agricultural industry, and that's hard hit because China's playing hardball right back about saying, well, we're not going to buy soybeans. I think it's a period of dislocation, but nobody said this switch from the old system to whatever the new system is was going to be easy. Hopefully, companies and industries are made whole. I just want to say, though, as far as the ruthlessness of it, we learned, and I was in the White House at the time, that when COVID happened, okay, so remember, I don't know if any of you, the older people may remember, but President Trump was calling it Wu flu, like Wuhan flu. He was calling it the China virus. And he stopped saying that very quickly because he got the phone call from the Chinese saying, if you want to keep doing that, we're not going to, first of all, we're not, period, going to give you protective devices. We're not going to sell you face masks. We've cornered the market on face masks, and you're not getting any. And then he said, and if you don't stop that, you're not getting any antibiotics next year, because they also control the supply chain of antibiotics. So it was a wake-up call to the United States to say we need to secure our supply chains of critical raw materials as well as critical health care and other needs that are essential to our society. But it was... I think that was the wake-up call that we needed to rejigger our whole trading system.
That was former Trump Deputy National Security Advisor KT McFarland speaking at the Boris Symposium at the University of Idaho last night. McFarland served in the first Trump administration. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox assisted with this story. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area. It'll be cloudy tonight, low 44, with a 30% chance of rain, mainly before 2 a.m. Cloudy through mid-morning tomorrow, then gradual clearing, high 63. Increasing clouds on Friday night, low 41. 20% chance of rain in the afternoon Saturday, partly sunny, high 61. 20% chance of rain Saturday night, partly cloudy, low 36. And sunny on Sunday, high 62. Areas of frost Sunday night into Monday morning. Currently 57 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox and Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is up next, the daily investigative news magazine. And coming up at 7:30, we'll have Appearing Locally, where we'll feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. At 8 o'clock, we will have First Wave, and at 9 o'clock, two episodes of Connecting the Notes, which features various musical artists. That'll go to 11. At 11 o'clock, live band jam band music till 1 a.m. with The Ride. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Giant Palouse Earthworm, providing DIY music booking in Moscow and Pullman, focusing on extreme metal, punk, hardcore, and the avant-garde. Giant Palouse Earthworm is available on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Rembrandt Tree Care, family-owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.